Welcome to Paper Money, the podcast covering the business side of the game industry. I'm Ben Clark.
And I'm Rhett Kipp.
Today is December 22nd, 2011.
Wow, here we are. Oh, end of the year.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas
And Happy Hanukkah. And
Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa. Holidays. Kwanzaa. Exactly. Anybody out there who's into it, Kwanzaa. Happy Kwanzaa.
Yep, exactly. And it's great to be back. Rhett and I have both been incapacitated with work from various sources, so we're running late on getting the show going, but that's going to lead into a little mention that we have here coming up in the news segment. But first, Rhett, has Santa brought you anything yet that looks like a game?
No, I have not seen any Santa prizes, but Santa doesn't deliver at my house, or I should phrase properly, Santa doesn't let you open his gifts until Christmas Day.
I see. So, interesting. Very interesting. So, I have one present under my tree that looks very suspiciously like a board game.
I don't even have gifts under my tree yet.
So, yeah, now you know that the show is probably going to get released on Christmas Day. So
awesome.
We could just pretend.
We could pretend. Well, you know what I got for Christmas?
Exactly.
Oh, never mind.
Right, exactly. I'm still not sure what I'm getting for Christmas, so we'll just have to pretend.
I'm getting high rich sulfur coal, I think.
I'm getting pure concentrated evil. If you're a Time Bandits fan, you know exactly what I'm getting.
Lasers day one.
That's right. But I digress. Let's go into the news. First things first, we're going to move to a monthly show format. And again, we mentioned the time constraints. You guys know our production schedule has been erratic for some time. And we tried to straighten that out previously and go to a 2-week schedule. And then someone forgot. Someone was actually very busy with Catalyst and other things that he does. And then someone else got busy with IT work. And ergo, we've been on a de facto 3-4 week schedule for a while. So we're going to make that official. We're going to do this show at the end of this month. And by the way, this show, we should mention, we're going to do our 2011 recap, and we're going to revisit the predictions we made at the beginning of the year. Something most pundits don't do, right? Is go back and look at our track record and tell and we'll be able to tell you how we did for 2011.
And you will cover any predictions that you might have made.
Exactly. And we're going to, now in January, at the end of January, we're going to do the next show in probably the last week of January. We're going to talk about Toy Fair, which is coming up in February. But we're also going to do our predictions.
12 predictions.
That's right. So listen closely to this show, and you'll have a very good idea of how accurate we're going to be for 2012.
So bet the farm.
Yeah, I'd say the over-under on our predictions is about 50%, but you know.
That's better than most Vegas spreads.
That's right, that's right. So the other piece of we have a few pieces of news we're going to run through before we get into our 2011 recap. But in addition to the format change, the big news that's come out recently is basically Hasbro has really hit the skids game-wise. Their stock is down 28% this year. Their board and card games in particular, our division has been hammered, which is weird because, and we're going to mention this later on in the show, Magic the Gathering sales have doubled since 2008. Okay, so their hobby sector is going really strong. Their mass market sector has basically augured in.
Yeah, you'll go through the stores and you'll look and, well, they lost a couple of big ones. They lost Risk, you know, so there's one of their big sale items there.
Mm-hmm.
And they blew the licensing to get Angry Birds.
Correct. And which is, by the way, has done screaming business for Mattel.
And I the other aspect of it, which we're really not covering it under our predictions, is I think a lot of the apps programs are really eaten into their business more than almost anywhere else.
That has been cited as one of the reasons for their decline is that there have been two reasons for their stock decline. One is that their TV network, The Hub, was slow to get off the ground and really still hasn't generated any big heat. I'll reserve judgment on that. I don't have cable. I don't want to sound like a Luddite here, but I don't have cable. So
would be me.
Yeah, but I don't want to – I can't pass judgment on the network. The other thing is that their electronic game strategy has been faulted. They've been late to the party, trying to get things off the ground. Now, as you guys know, in the early 2000s, they did very well with Risk and Battleship and a couple of other like Electronic Monopoly. They did very well with those titles as PC games. However, they got pantsed with Scrabble Online, and they have also been basically no shows in terms of the iOS, right? The portable game market.
And so
you can get Puerto Rico and Settlers of Catan and a bunch of other great games for your iPad. You can't do that with the Hasbro games, and that has been faulted. And I've got to believe that is a huge, huge thing. The other thing, I'll say this though, is that they haven't generated a new title in ages.
No, there has been, no big breakout game in mass market.
Mattel had Blockus a couple years ago, and Hasbro has had nothing. They have reinvigorated to a large extent some of their older titles, but they haven't generated anything new, and that's really hurt them. And honestly, all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, we could, I think at some point we'll actually get around to talking about, some of the trade games that they've come out this year. And while interesting, they're a little odd. They're new Risk one, and we talked about earlier offline. And Hasbro has just made some odd choices. I don't know that they're bad choices. They're just odd.
Well, we'll talk about that during our recap. But I think the important thing to note is that they're trade games, right? They are for hobby industry titles. Whatever happens, I don't want to say they're going to be a blip in Hasbro's revenue. They're going to be a little bit more than that, but it's not the same as selling a million copies of Monopoly.
Absolutely.
All right, let's move on to, speaking of titles that are being invigorated, Fortress America is in the news again. As most of you probably are already aware, FFG is reprinting Fortress America. Recently took a bunch of heat for the original box copy of the game. And has been forced to change it. I've read the old version and I've read the new version, and I'd have to say, get a life. the folks who are complaining about the game, the criticism was that the copy cast America as the bad guy, or could be interpreted as casting the American as a bad guy, and it's Fortress America, folks. The whole point is, America gets attacked by a bunch of people and you're defending St. Louis. So really, let's as long as we're suspending reality. That said, it's interesting to see FFG either quit. I think this is one of those no press is bad press things.
Yeah.
So I think they'll do well with it. But it was interesting to see Fortress America get some play on the internets as, well, quite frankly, the first time in 20 years that it has. That said, let's move on to another old title, Battleship. And Rhett, I have to tell you, the trailer, it didn't suck.
Yeah, but it is a trailer.
I've seen two trailers now, but yeah, I thought it was going to suck a lot.
Well, so did Hasbro and virtually everybody else. So, they figured out how to pull it out of the ashes.
Well, I think like Battleship Galaxies, Hasbro's going to, I think what they've done is slap the Battleship name on something that is not remotely Battleship.
Yeah.
And honestly, it reminded me more of Battlefield Los Angeles, I think, than Battle Los Angeles.
Right.
Than anything having to do with Battleship, but I digress. Battleship, the Battleship trailer is out. We've been maligning their films. Can't wait to see the Candyland trailer now, as a result of that. I understand Liam Neeson has signed up to play the heavy in that one too.
Yeah, I just have visions of Smurfs again.
Yeah.
Anyway,
let's
just go on to something else.
All right.
This is just going nowhere good.
Okay, that's true. Because I was about to haul out Chris Cooper as another possible heavy for Candyland. And let's talk about some of the things we missed while we were off the air. One was Chi-Tag. And yep. Rhett, you and I were both scouring the news for this. Not a lot of news out of Chi-Tag.
No, it happened. One of the weird things there was locally, it was one of four shows A really odd weekend for a lot of people who produce shows. So,
correct. And I don't know that. They have the show now at downtown at Navy Pier, and they do it on the same day as the tree lighting. Okay, on Saturday night before Thanksgiving, and that's always helped there. That helped attendance the first year they did it, and I know they did it again this year. But really, it was almost they usually do some honorary awards the night before and some lifetime stuff like that. I didn't see hardly any of that in the news anywhere. Normally, Mary Cousin, who runs that show, does a bang up job of getting press out there, and really no news came out of it this year, so I was a little surprised. And speaking of news, the other convention that weekend was, of course, BGG.con down in Dallas. And I don't want to say it was a ho-hum show because I'll get hate mail for saying that. But it was like the usual suspects, right? Everybody knew, like, the new Donald P. Vicario game, Kingdom Builder, came out of the show with a ton of buzz and has subsequently released and is doing really well. But I'm sure there are other games that did well, but nothing surprised me coming out of BGG.com.
No, I was going to say, I think that was pretty much the best way to describe it is the regular suspects. It was the people you thought would come out with stuff. What they came out with was nice. I don't know that I would call any of it groundbreaking. I would not describe any of it as, super... super exciting. It wasn't like the game that everybody had to have that didn't show up.
Correct. And I guess the best way for me to describe this, and I'll mention this as well in our predictions, was there was no new Dominion.
Right.
Yeah. So now, speaking of our predictions and speaking of the usual suspects, let's do our 2011 recap. Sorry, that's heavy duty audio effects there.
So go ahead. Spent extra special on that effect too.
We did.
It cost us our entire year's budget.
That's right. I'll fix it in post. That said, I had a couple of predictions for the industry as a whole, and so did Rhett. And so we're going to start with the industry as a whole, and then we're going to go category by category. And then readers who submitted predictions, and you know who you are. I said readers, didn't I?
Yeah. You pluralized.
Yeah. yes. And they're also probably listening rather than reading. We're going to go through their predictions as well. And I went through them before the show, and there were some good stuff in there. So readers, hang tight. We're going to get to your predictions as well. Now,
and listeners will actually even pay attention.
Did I say readers?
You did it again. Yeah. You really want to just have everybody reading our podcast.
I am so old school. I should find a transcription service just so I can say that accurately. All right. That said, 2011 predictions. I said industry as a whole up 8 to 12%. I said we're going to see more $100 games. And I think we saw more $100 games. Industry as a whole up 8 to 12%. I would say that the hobby market was up 8 to 12%.
It certainly looked like it was up again this year.
All right. Now, Rhett, you said we were going to have a banner year, that we were going to be a big upswell. You were really huge on this being a big year.
I thought this was going to be a big year.
All right.
Now, sadly, we'll talk about why.
Let's talk about reality. All right. Those were our predictions. And I say that we missed this one. All right. I said industry as a whole up 8 to 12%. We thought there were going to be breakout titles or crossover titles, and we didn't get those.
No. There was the I would say half of the big games predicted for 2012 or 2011 are going to be 2012 games.
Yes, exactly. That we'll just trot those same predictions out for next year. But
that's right. Just dust them off and shovel them out as new.
Now, but on one aspect though, and you were telling me this in the pre-show, you say it was a bigger year than ever because
numbers of titles. We saw just more choices that I think we've ever seen before. Board games were huge in the number of titles that were being released. Lots of players who'd not gone into markets suddenly appearing in markets. People that had maybe one game in the market now having a half a dozen games to a dozen games by the end of the year. The big players, Z-Man, Fantasy Flight, Rio, et cetera, expanding even more so on their schedules than had previously seen. Fantasy Flight, I'm staggered by the amount of product that Fantasy Flight alone is producing nowadays. It's overwhelming, and it's in all categories.
You know, FFG in particular, though, is catching some flack about that. Well, not so much the number of titles, so much as some of the issues that they've had in getting that many products out the door.
Yeah, I mean, you know, overall, the consumers can't buy deep enough, perhaps, is the best way to describe it. You know, if there are 40 games that came out in a year, there could be a big success because, you know, everybody could buy a few of this and a few of that and then find the one that they really, really liked and invest into that heavily. When there are 300 titles, there were so many titles that would have been really good sellers that just did okay because people needed to choose.
Well, here's my question for you, though, Rhett. Was 2011 the board game D20 moment? When there was so much new title coming out that the stores couldn't keep up with it and player interest waned because they couldn't figure out what to buy, right? Or they couldn't buy enough of to keep everybody going in the market.
I would say that certainly what I saw at our level at retail, that was absolutely what it was like. You know, titles that we would have normally seen easy a half dozen sales on, maybe one or, you know, maybe two sales on. It wasn't because they weren't good titles, but it was because instead of having one game to compete with, there were 10 games to compete with.
Right. And so what happens, and folks, when I talk about a D20 moment, if for those of you who are familiar with the role-playing game market, when Hasbro opened up with the open GL, the open license, there was a flood of product. And there was so much product out there, the market truly expanded. There was more money than ever spent on RPGs. The problem was is that as the pie grew, everyone's individual slice of it got so much smaller that it was very difficult to make any real money. And again, I wonder if 2011 is our D20 moment where there are so many titles out there that you can't hardly keep track of all of them. Now, again, the market grew. That's not a bad thing. On the other hand, if you can't hear any, you know, if nothing stands out above the crowd, then, you know, then there's going to be a problem, I think, in the long run.
Yeah. And, you know, like I say, the problem from retailers is the same one as what hit with the D20 market. It became very, very difficult to predict the successes and the non-successes, because I don't want to say failures. There are plenty of games out there that sold, not as failures, but just didn't make their normal impact because there was so much else to choose from.
Correct. And the thing too is at the retail level, board games, you know, you're talking about a $50 or $60 product. The retailer's got 25 or 30 in that. Compared to an RPG, you know, a lot of the stuff that was coming out was coming out at $20 or even $12.
Yeah.
And so you only had $6 to $10 in an RPG product. It's difficult to stock even, you know, not so much deeply, but widely on board games when you're looking at $30 a product.
Yeah. And, you know, again, so it was just the volume. This is really a question of volume.
So, okay. So we disagree. I say that we thought that there was going to be, I don't know, I thought there were going to be breakout and crossover titles. I thought the industry as a whole was going to be up. The hobby market was up. The mass market was down, as witnessed by Hasbro. Mattel's grown, but I don't think that Mattel has grown on the back of Angry Birds, quite frankly. And so maybe we're right. The industry was up, but by the same token, the flood of titles, I think, may cause more problems than it actually solves.
Yeah, I think there'll be a big backlash in the next couple of years.
Okay, so let's move on to board games specifically. Now, we talked about that. The industry as a whole was dominated by board games this year, but let's talk about our predictions for the board game category. We should have a big drum roll or a cymbal crash or something like that. I said Ameritrash. No big hits in 2011 for Ameritrash titles from FFG. AEG was going to do something new and should be and therefore you know, was going to have some new titles out. They were reorganizing, and that board games would still rule, still lots of titles. Rhett, you said it's still the year of the board game.
Yeah.
The reality, it was the year of the board game. Yeah. It was an extremely good year. There were some solid new Euros. There was no new Dominion. But I think I was right. I don't know of any big Ameritrash style hits. Descent is still the big one over at FFG. And they've announced they're going to do a second edition, which has caused some people to complain. I think there's some differences of opinion over second edition. But by the same token, it's actually – there's some cool things coming on second edition Descent. But that's still the big one. Some of the new $100 games that they've come out with,
I got to say, the big one that I like this year was really second edition, speaking of second editions, Nexus Collapse. For all those people that missed it, Nexus, the Italian subdivision, so to speak, of FFG, collapsed this summer. They have been replaced by, I believe the company is Ares. And very close relationships have pretty much, it seems like it might have been the designers who started that company. I'm not quite sure. But in any case, no longer a tie-in with FFG that I can tell. There seems to be a little bad blood there. But they just released the second edition Lord of the Rings board game, another $100 game.
Is that the War of the Ring?
War of the Ring. And, oh, is it doing well?
And okay, so that might be – okay, so maybe I'm wrong on the Ameritrash no big hits because War of the Ring is getting a lot of press. And that's only come out recently, though. That's only come out in the last month or two.
It's not even that old. It came out maybe 2 weeks ago. It is still early.
Okay, because the my gaming group here in the Grand Rapids area – has been talking about it for about a month. This is one we want to play. But I haven't had a chance to track it down. And, but I've seen some bits online. I see that it's hot on the Geek. But so might be wrong about that. For the most part, though, I'm going to say that I was right with no big $100 game hits, or, you know, $80, $90 games.
Yeah.
It was the year of the board game and there were a boatload of titles. And, now, Rhett, one of the things I wanted to talk about in the board game thing was Hasbro's move in a big way, but certainly Hasbro spending more time rather than just, for instance, Battleship Galaxies was released under the Hasbro name, and it's a hobby market product.
Right.
There is no Avalon Hill imprint on it. I think there might be a Wizards logo somewhere.
You know, I don't recall if there was a Wizards logo on it or not. I remember being very taken back by the fact that none of it was obvious other than the Hasbro.
Correct. And they've also released the new version of Risk, the campaign Risk thing. Both of those, big $60 games, pretty much, I won't say hobby market only, but very much hobby market oriented. That you might be able to find these somewhere else. But I know Battleship Galaxies, at least, was exclusive for a good chunk of time. But there's been no expansion for Battleship Galaxies. It came out in the summer, so they didn't really do anything for the Christmas season. And Hasbro, in general, their board game sales are down, so maybe these products not doing as well as they'd hoped.
Yeah, it's a hard call. I have, you know, Galaxies has been a popular game. Within the level of the stuff we've seen this year, I would put it in the top tier.
Yes, not to imply that Battleship Galaxies is not doing well.
Yeah, it's definitely doing well.
It's doing great hobby market numbers. I don't know if it's doing great mass market numbers.
Yes, because we become, you know, apples and oranges in comparative numbers.
Correct.
And the new Risk is very interesting because it seems to generate extremes. You know, either people love it or hate it. It is a very odd type of product, as it is. You permanently mark it up, and people are having a hard time with, you know, the idea that, you know, if I play this game with my friends and I do this, you know, can I play it with my other friends? Well, maybe kind of, but it's not really the same game anymore. And at $60, you know, effectively having a game of one shot, now it's multiple plays as it's designed to be a campaign game, is definitely catching in some people's craw and exciting others.
I think that this is a market opportunity for Ultra Pro to create board sleeves. For those of you who don't know, for the new Risk game, you put stickers on the board marking your territories. And, you know, like card games where you – oh, forget it. Anyways, moving on, let's talk about collectible card games this year. Our predictions, I said it will continue, they will continue their slow spiral down. I think the Bakugan movie was came out this year. And I would like to say sank without a trace. On the other hand, I wasn't paying attention. And Rhett went out on a limb and said, really, the only thing that was going to do anything for CCGs was if someone came out with a Star Wars collectible card game. The reality was, yes, collectible card games continued their slow spiral down, except for one huge exception.
One major exception, which would be
Magic the Gathering sales. Yeah. Magic the Gathering sales have doubled since 2008 and continue to do well. The average, by the way, I read this online recently. The average lifespan, as it were, of a Magic player is 8 years. That's huge.
That's huge. It's more than almost three times the average gaming or life expectancy.
Exactly. And they keep buying product, and they keep buying the same product over and over and over again. So it's a huge, huge exception to the rule that collectible card games are not doing particularly well. One of them is.
The kudos I will give to Wizards in particular is to be able to have reinvented parts of Magic a couple of times in that period. And it's, you know, since 2008, you know, they've done two. Actually, I thought the best one they have done is this year with their new, I think it's called Commander's Edition. Effectively, all your cards are unique. And that's really different for a Magic game. You know, most people are used to the multiples of the card that I need to win.
Exactly. And I will say this, if we passed out awards, I would have to give a Lifetime Achievement Award for brand and gameplay management with Magic the Gathering.
Absolutely.
With the possible exception of Falling Empires causing half the industry to go out of business, there has never been any miscalculation with this product.
No, they've done 20 years, and you know they've had their highs and they've had their lows, but the fact that they're doubling their marketing, you know, again, yes, is pretty impressive. I mean, that's nothing but impressive, and you know they're. One of the things is they had a retailers seminar where they invited top retailers from around the country in specifically to talk about how they can promote this game and make it even stronger. So yes, they're very determined to keep Magic, you know, in people's stores and selling well and expanding their market. So more power to you, Wizards.
Correct. So I'm going to say that we were spot on that prediction, right? At the time we said, other than Magic the Gathering, right? We've said for years, right, that Magic the Gathering sells. If you have a licensed product tie-in, your CCG will sell for a while. But everything else is going down the drain, and that has certainly continued. By the way, you know what I read recently? Do you know what Richard Garfield said was probably his favorite game design?
Cosmic Encounter?
Netrunner.
Netrunner.
Of the games he designed, if you remember the old CCG for Shadowrun, that he said that was his favorite.
No, Netrunner was Wizards. Shadowrun was a Fawcett design. Netrunner was Wizards of the Coast. Right, ugly purpley green box.
Yeah, but I thought Netrunner was it just their cyberpunk title? I thought it was tied into Shadowrun.
No, that was their own title.
Okay, all right.
The only license they did was with BattleTech. They did the BattleTech license for FASA.
Yeah, that one disappeared really quick too. All right, moving on. Let's go to RPGs. And I said the PDF market was going to continue to grow, and that was going to be the breeding ground for new and interesting stuff. Rhett said that there were going to be no breakout games. There was going to be no new fifth edition, no Uber product that drove the industry. But he said there was going to be lots of experimentation and not just from small companies. And again, Rhett also mentioned the Star Wars license.
There's a thing in there, isn't there?
Yeah, there's always a thing. So let's talk about the reality of what happened. Let's start with the big one first, Rhett. What happened at Gen Con this year?
There was an announcement about Star Wars.
And have we seen any product for that?
We have not yet seen product. But to their credit, Fantasy Flight did tell us at Gen Con we would not see, since we're talking RPGs, we would not see an RPG for Star Wars until 2012.
Correct. In fact,
just
we have
shift my entire predictions a year.
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, well, all of the it being FFG, I fully expect to be drowning in Star Wars product by the end of Gen Con.
I would expect by this time next year, we will be going over category by category by category of the success of Star Wars.
Entirely possible. Entirely possible. Especially if George Lucas gets a chance to re-edit one more of the films for Blu-ray.
Nah. Well, you know, the nice thing is, you know, I'm still dying to see Star Wars again. Someday, maybe I'll get to see the film I saw.
You know, I want to see the Phantom edit for the original movie.
I would be really happy to see all three of them and edit them into one movie.
Well, or edit them back to the way they were before they changed them. I'm a big hand shot first guy.
There you go.
But I digress. Okay, so there were no real... I don't want to say there were no breakout games. I think both the Pathfinder intro set and the D&D intro set both did good numbers.
Yes,
But there was no new, tier one game. There were a lot of cool smaller games. But...
Yes. There was a lot of interesting re-releases of re-engineering, I'm not sure the terminology I'd like to use there, of titles that have been around for a number of years.
It was a very interesting. In fact, Rifts got play this year. Not just Rifts, but the Palladium's Fantasy role playing game actually got and I won't say it made a big dent, but the fact that I saw any press at all on Palladium's what can only be described as ancient RPG surprised me a little bit, but there was lots of experimentation. There was experimentation by larger companies. There were lots of new titles and lots of new systems.
Yeah,
and that was a huge win for me. And because I, you know, for years I've been worried about the RPG market. I've been saying, oh, without, you know, one huge product at the top, that, you know, without D&D, you know, being the gateway product, that it's a problem. But I'm looking more and more at some of these titles. The production values are going up.
Absolutely.
The quality of the indie games is stellar in many cases, even if I don't necessarily like the gameplay. The production quality and the ideas therein have been really cool.
And the fact that some of the big players went into indie-style RPGs, I thought, was interesting this year.
Catalyst did Cosmic Patrol. I think that the influx of money over at Cubicle 7 helped them. They came out with a couple of cool products this year.
We continue to see the same type of stuff coming out from... I'm just blanking here.
This is being a podcast. You can't say that game by that guy.
Yeah. It'll come to me, and I'll remember the future.
I'm not gonna let you dangle for forever.
There we go. So, anyway, but
if you think of it later in the show, you know,
I will certainly think of it at some point.
So we had a good year for the role playing game market. In fact, I would say better than expected, given how booming the board game market is.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that both Fantasy Flight and more so Paizo continues to produce just a really beautiful product, good line, continued strong growth on the Pathfinder line.
I haven't heard anyone complain either about a Pathfinder product that, you know, like after a while, like some of the D&D stuff, you're like, oh my God, really? The player's option rule books, you know, or, you know, whatever. I have yet to see Paizo release a major product that people said, blech, you know, this is for the completist only.
Yeah,
and they've done an extremely good job in building and managing that brand,
and they have, and they continue to do so. You know, so, and they've got good strong products for all the big parts of the season.
Yes, so a really good year in role playing games, and I will say, unless of course you were the line manager for 4th edition, but it was, again, I predicted the PDF market was going to grow, and I think that has. And you predicted I didn't predict the overall market would grow, but you predicted lots of experimentation, which we had, and that there would be no breakout games. So really, we did pretty well on that, I think. And as did the industry. So let's move on to minis, which, by the way, I'm not going to say we did anywhere near as well on as RPGs. In my case, my show notes for the show that we did our predictions in says simply Star Trek ? And Rhett, and I'm going to quote you exactly for from what you said in our 2011 prediction show, you said, and I quote, "This may be the year for miniatures." And then you qualified it and said, well, not in sales, but in an expanding market, which is like, it's, let's like military intelligence. That's an oxymoron. It's an expanding market, but sales aren't going to grow. So at the end of the year, Star Trek came out last month.
Well, Star Trek, the fantasy, or excuse me, the, WizKids one came out in the summer, came out in, September, I believe it was.
And August. I won't say it sank without a trace, because I did see it at Gen Con, but it's basically sank without a trace after that.
It's a $100 game. You know, one of your predictions that we would see $100 games. It's a $100 game. It is done reasonably well. But it is not, you know, lit so many fires that everybody in the world really is, you know, following it.
Yes.
Now, and surprisingly, not much in the way of expansions for it.
Correct, which is the way to develop your $100 game.
Yeah. Mongoose, who licensed with Amarillo to do the Skyfall of Stars, Starfleet Battles tie-in with a whole new minis line, might make Christmas.
Yeah, so
they
folks,
still
if
don't
you
have a product out yet.
Yes, if you go to your retail game store after 4 o'clock when the UPS guy comes on Christmas Eve, you might be able to get this product for Christmas.
Oh, actually, it would have to be tomorrow because there's no deliveries on Saturday.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so it would be tomorrow. Tomorrow.
Great. Okay, so there you go. Call your game store after 4 o'clock tomorrow if they have it at Made Christmas. If not, we were wrong.
Yeah, well it still
that's
could
not
make
true.
This
we
year.
Were, we were wrong anyway.
They have a whole week after that they could still make the year.
Doesn't matter. Not gonna. It's yeah, but it's not gonna make any impact
until
2012.
It will not make the impact that we worried about.
So the reality, by the way, is okay. Star Trek did not make a big impression in miniatures, and I was kind of curious that it was not going to anyway. And Rhett said that this would be the year for miniatures, and in terms of expanding the market. Now the reality is, it was not a breakout year, and Star Trek didn't really make much of an impact.
No, we did see some major gains and some interesting choices this year in the minis lines. Games Workshop introduced Finecast and bailed out completely of metal at this point. They're no longer doing metal.
Yes.
And that's an interesting position to have been in. It's this whole weird kind of plastics end of it. Fantasy Flight, we have seen some strong growth in the Dust line. The Dust line continues to expand. And their full real minis versus board game comes out in 2012. So again, we get another 2012 shot for miniatures. And, you know, I've heard that the Osprey's Tomorrow War has done extremely well. Maybe one of the best titles Osprey's ever produced.
Now, we mentioned that recently on the podcast, and I use recently as a relative term given our podcast schedule, but Tomorrow's War is their, it's their science fiction, is it's near future, right?
It's near future, more real science than science fiction.
Okay.
Well, more than space opera, I guess is a better way to
say it. So that came out and sold out. I think that might be the highlight of the year for miniatures, because realistically, you're kind of right in the expanding market. The miniatures market has greatly expanded if you count Tide of Iron and Battle of Westeros or Westeros or
Westeros,
yeah, and all the, you know, all the Battlelore spinoffs and the Memoir 44s. Miniatures are a huge component in a lot of the more mainstream games.
Absolutely.
But miniatures as miniatures, which, you know, the way Rhett and I grew up with, you know, where you get, you know, lead poisoning from touching the darn things and painting them yourself. God forbid you should paint a miniature yourself. But, hey, you know, let me go off on my rant. That market is – I don't think it's growing, even with the shift to plastic, even with Wither Arcane Legions. Right.
Yeah, they're going to have to come out with another. You know, the odd thing here is that what seems to be the most successful style games for miniatures are the games that are very crossover. You know, some of the classics would be like BattleTech. Is BattleTech a miniatures game? Is BattleTech a board game? You know, we look at things like Dust, the new one from Fantasy Flight. Is Dust a miniatures game? Is it a board game? You've already named, you know, half a dozen things. Memoir 44, Tide of Iron.
What's the, what was the sci-fi, it was basically the redo of, AT-43.
That's Dust.
Oh, okay. Thank you. So Dust Tactics. Thank you. I don't know. I think that was one of those, that was another $100 game that I would say it underperformed in my eyes.
It actually has done, underperformed, I will maybe give you, it's certainly still a very strong title. It produces a lot of product every month, and it sells that product monthly, and it's a very, it's a big expansion game system.
So I'm wrong about Dust Tactics, then.
And Privateer has, done really well again with the re-engineering of both their War Machine and Hordes.
Yeah, at one point, didn't we say War Machine was going to be the highlight of the year? Was that maybe that was last year?
Yeah, and it's again, it's they've done really, really well with that. And GW, as I said, GW has done reasonable. It's hard to tell what their decline is. They will tell us every year what their decline is, but this is an odd sort of market at present because, like I say, I think we're going to see the big successes only when we see them make some level of crossover to other genres. I think, one of the things you pointed out, the pre-painted style thing is still going to be a big deal. And FFG, Star Wars, I think we're going to see it, at least I know in part we're going to see it with the Starship Minis. We'll see if we don't see it with other things as well from them.
Yeah, getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, I think 2012 is going to be much more the year of the miniature than 2011.
Yeah.
All right. So not quite an epic fail, but certainly we kind of missed
off the mark.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. So Tomorrow's War did well, and Star Trek was a complete no-show. And I would say you were hopelessly wrong with calling this the year in miniatures with its expanding market, but not in sales. Moving on to ever smaller markets, let's talk about War games.
Yeah.
My prediction was that GMT was going to keep trying Euro games again with Urban Sprawl and Dominant Species and some more new titles. Also, Conflict of Heroes was looking to do and expand into West Front games. So they had previously done just East Front games. Now, Rhett, you expected Avalanche to still go strong. And you also talked a good game about Lock and Load. You thought that was going to do well. And GMT's Labyrinth game, their War on Terror game, was going to do really well. Now, I'm going to come back to reality here and say GMT has done pretty well with their Euro games. I want to say your Urban Sprawl and Dominant Species are both doing well. On the other hand, I won't call either of them a huge breakout. For the same reasons, by the way, that everyone else has had problems with breakout titles, and that there's been so many board game titles this year.
Yeah.
GMT, I God bless them, should have pushed harder into Euro games about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But we've talked about that before, though. It's been very hard for them to break out of the war game ghetto, so to speak.
On the other hand, they've done a lot of really nice titles in the war game series this year, and those have done really well.
Correct.
Within their niche market.
Absolutely. I will not fault GMT at all for their production schedule. They're doing extremely well, both financially and reasonably. And honestly, in the war game market, other than ASL, I won't say it begins and ends with GMT, but really they're the 800-pound gorilla, in that market. And everyone else is a bit player. Now, unless you count FFG's Tide of Iron and a couple of other titles that are...
Staying within their other stuff. You know, Multiman has not had, has tried a couple of experiments outside of their ASL line, and they've done okay, but nothing, has really stood out for them.
Correct. What I find interesting is that MMP has a pledge page, a P500 type system, and I found that the titles rolling off of that after they hit the required number of titles is very slow compared to the way GMT is getting stuff out the door.
Yeah.
And again, I have a very good friend who does the Two Half Squads podcast, which is dedicated to ASL. And I know that they're continually, you know, frustrated that, the squad leader stuff goes in and out of print all the time. And again, I think part of this is just MMP is producing very expensive games and has all of their attention trying to get those out the door. And, you know, when you're producing, $120 expansion for Advanced Squad Leader, it ties up a lot of capital. But not to make mountains out of molehills here, but let's get back to the war game market. It's fairly small. And now, Rhett, I want to talk about your predictions. Avalanche was going to go strong in this small market. And
nothing really this year.
Yeah, they had a lot of titles last year, and I think this year has been a regroup year for them. Lock and Load, you had predicted, would do very well, and I would say it's doing as well as it ever has.
They've done some interesting things with their non-historical titles. Their zombie games have done okay. It's a big year for zombie games. A lot of amazing number of titles on zombie games this year.
I quit. We should have done like a zombie watch at some point, because there were about 50 titles that came out with zombies. And the War on Terror game did okay. I mean, it did solid numbers for GMT. Yeah. But the real story this year was, I think, A Few Acres of Snow.
Absolutely.
It's the own. Okay. When you think, hey, I'm going to do a historical war game about the French and Indian War, how many of you just yawned as I finished that sentence?
I think they went into a coma.
They might have. And yet A Few Acres of Snow is getting real positive vibes on the geek. I know that the group that I play with, which is very World War II heavy, is just can't get enough A Few Acres of Snow. So it's done extremely well. So and not something I expected. It's a Dominion-type drafting mechanic, and it's a fairly strategic gameplay. But again, the topic and the genre, I did not expect that game to do well, but that was the breakout title. And I would certainly never have predicted a deck building mechanic for a French and Indian War game.
Apparently the mechanic was more exciting than the period to gamers. You know, I think they're really drawn to the whole concept of this thing. You know, had this been a World War II game or something more approachable, a modern game, for example, maybe even a bigger, you know, maybe even a crossover on this one, because people were attracted to this, you know, to this mechanism.
Right. And you know what? It's a great mechanism. And quite frankly, if you're used to playing historical card games, let's face it, Dominion's gameplay is outstanding. So why, you know, if you're used to doing, you know, I go Hugo type, you know, gameplay, it is going to rock your world. The other story I think this year was Conflict of Heroes is still selling well, but they never went into West Front. No. And I understand that Academy is they're actually, I think they did a Napoleonic title this year.
Yes.
Which is, by the way, has gotten rave reviews. But I thought COH, once they moved into West Front, was really going to establish itself as the new tactical board game standard. I figured you were going to have that and Combat Commander as these are the two games. If you want to play a World War II game that's not Tide of Iron, these are the two that you're going to play. And Conflict of Heroes, I think they missed the boat here. I don't know if Uwe decided to, you know, it wasn't something he wanted to do if he wanted to move on topic wise, but Conflict of Heroes didn't do anything like what I thought it was going to do this year.
Yeah.
So
I go along with you. I'm not sure why they chose not to. I thought at least they might have done an approach, given this was the 70th anniversary of the United States entering the war.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Perhaps, you know, for the 70th anniversary of D-Day.
Yeah, exactly. And now, Rhett, in the pre-show, you said that you thought the War Games had seen lots of titles this year, and it was relatively prolific.
I feel that the War Games situation was pretty much the same as we'd seen with other board game situations. A lot of players in it, a lot of players releasing lots of titles, with the exception of one or two, not a whole lot getting great response simply because too many choices again, you know, narrow market and too many choices.
Yeah. In fact, the more I think about that, there really have been a lot of new, small and different titles, I guess, in terms of the war game market, things that they're not, you know, it used to be with a war game, You got a 1-inch, 1-inch deep, 9-inch by 12-inch box, a poster-sized map, a sheet of counters, and a 16-page rulebook.
Yeah.
And you paid $50 for this, and it was like you got what you got. But they were all in that format. And that's really not the case anymore. The variety of play styles and components. So, you know, we've seen tons and tons of cards introduced. We've seen lots of different topics, different approaches, everything from a few acres of snow, to fairly abstract games with a historical theme that are, you know, sold into the war game market. So yeah, I guess there has been a lot of titles and a lot of experimentation.
Yeah. And we even get the same, you know, the toy oriented game. We had a couple of Napoleonic games last year. We had another one, this one, from Westwood, I think is the company. I'm sure it's wrong, but, they had a new Napoleonic game this year, again, with the markers being plastic figures,
mm-hmm.
Yep. You know, and again, as I say, we're continuously seeing people starting to make that experimentation. I believe there's a World War I game that came out like that as well.
Sorry, I just like the idea of a World War I game with lots of counters. They go on and off the board so quickly.
Well, you know, it's nice to be able to play that game where you just, you know, how many guys died this turn? Okay, you sweep your hand over and grab as many as you can, and that's how many you kill this time with the machine gun.
Oh, yeah, that's not a bad mechanic. I like that.
Yeah, it's practical. Anyway. Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the mass market. Having covered the world's tiniest niche game market, let's talk about the mass market.
Here we go.
All right. I asked, is it still going to be a wasteland? And were we going to see any crossover games? I thought it was still going to be largely a wasteland, that we might see some cool crossover games. Rhett went all in on LEGO games. He said they were going to break open the mass market and that LEGO was the most likely to produce a crossover product.
There's a fail.
Yeah. Exactly.
They did at least produce some more games this year.
Yes. The reality is that Hasbro is suffering mightily. Stratego, which we jokingly, you know, mocked at our, because they had been purchased by Spin Master at the beginning of the year. Nothing this Christmas. I haven't seen any Stratego product.
There's the new Stratego, which is a science fiction looking version of it.
Okay.
And that came out, you know, normal time for Christmas, like September.
I didn't see any press on it. I mean, very
little press. I mean, just kind of is there.
Yes, I'm very surprised by that. If I were the guy who had been with Hasbro for 50 years and decided to move, I would be angry, unless I got an upfront deal and not a royalty, not a percentage.
Yeah, no idea.
Okay, because Hasbro had been pushing Stratego a lot the last few years.
They did, and they've always done a pretty nice variation on it when they got a good license deal.
So Stratego didn't go anywhere, which is something that we mentioned. Mattel did well with Angry Birds. It blew the doors out, kind of as expected. But basically, I was right. It's still a wasteland. We didn't get any crossover games. And the LEGO games that came out this year, Rhett, I apologize. They suck as bad as the ones that came out last year.
I think they're actually less appealing even.
They might be. I mean, honestly, well, you don't have any. I think you might. Is there a new Harry Potter one in the mix? That was the only one that did any real numbers anyway.
Yeah,
everything else was like it was difficult to move, but the Harry Potter game just kind of flew off the shelf.
Yeah, so. And I'm very much of the appeal of the opinion that the appeal to these games is they're just cool little minifig guys, and you know I don't know that people play the game.
Yeah, the gameplay is uniformly terrible. The only game that plays any well, I think, is Pirate's Code, which is basically just Mastermind with Legos.
Yeah.
So very disappointing in the LEGO stuff. And Rhett, I have to say, you were just epically wrong.
Horrible, horrible.
I know, folks. Yeah, go back and listen. I think it's podcast number 41 or 42. Go back and listen to Rhett's enthusiasm for these LEGO products, about how clever and amazing the LEGO engineers were, and then go and buy a LEGO product. Or better yet, don't buy one. Just play one of your friends and realize the vast gap between Rhett's expectations of reality and what actually happened.
They are still amazingly engineered. We can just forget the gameplay. They need to hire some game designers.
Okay, the LEGO Millennium Falcon is incredibly engineered. The games themselves are not engineered all that well. Anyways, moving on to our readers' predictions for 2011. Let's go. Let's start with Mr. Dan Glovier. Dan said, I predict that a mobile device, iPad or other, tie-in with a board game will emerge as a solid seller. That was a very safe prediction, and Dan was extremely right. Sellers of Catan, in fact, just recently introduced, you can now do in-game purchases of the Settlers add-ons. I know many of the games that we know and love in the Euro market are out there. I know Small World has done a big push. Days of Wonder has done a big push with Ticket to Ride and Small World. And I think Memoir 44 might be coming out as well for iPad. And rumor has it that there is a BattleTech Battle Mech license game coming out in 2012.
That's what I've heard.
For iOS. So really, this is a huge hit for Dan. I would say that was a fairly safe prediction and one that I think Rhett and I hopefully touched on, but I didn't mention earlier. I'm going to claim that we said that. Dan spot on about that one. He also said, I predict that RPGs will scuffle along. He says, I'll think that Pathfinder may have found its level, and that unless something appears out of nowhere from WotC, it's a ho-hum year. And I'd say that one was about right, too.
Pathfinder does seem to still be growing.
He missed that. Okay. But nothing did appear out of nowhere from WotC.
Yeah, nothing this year from WotC.
Yes. And his he has two more predictions. Someone will take note of Catan's continued success and will vanilla it to make it more palatable to the general public. And that was a fail. That did not happen. And we haven't seen anything remotely like Europlay in a mass market game. His other prediction, and this one was contrary to what I expected, conventions will continue to see a rise in attendance, a significant rise, in fact, as they finally start to market to the mainstream gamer population. Spot on, Dan. As Rhett and I reported earlier this year, Gen Con's numbers grew astronomically year over year on attendance. And a lot of that was, in fact, Origins did very well as well. And both of those conventions have done extremely well marketing to the day tripper crowd.
Right.
The mainstream gamers who aren't interested in coming for 4 days and dropping a grand to go to the show, like Rhett and I always end up doing, but who are going to come out on Saturday or Sunday with their kid or kids in a stroller and walk around and just see what there is to see and maybe buy something. But they ended up getting a reduced price at Origins, I think, for Sunday. I want to say it's like $5 for showroom only or $10 for showroom only visitation. And so, again, a spot on prediction from Mr. Dan Glovier on convention attendance. And I was skeptical. I was very skeptical of that was going to happen this year. So kudos to Dan.
Yeah, we're going to have to maybe get Dan on the show one of these days.
Yeah, maybe we should have him phone in for his predictions for the January show. And finally, our other emailer was Alan Kaiser, a longtime listener. And I even said listener.
You did. I was going to compliment you on that, but you covered yourself.
I did. Alan predicted that, one, we would see commercials on TV for board games. And I would have to say I'm sorry, Alan, that could be a fail. It might not be a fail. As I mentioned earlier in the show, I don't have cable TV. So, Rhett?
There have been some.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What games? I mean, like mass market Schleck or Angry Birds?
Yeah, well, Angry Birds and a few other things like that, yeah.
But nobody pushing Dominion?
I have not seen Dominion or Catan or any of those on there.
Yeah. I'll bet you there's some board game commercials on the Hub. That's a little callback to earlier in the show, the Hasbro TV. Okay. Anyways, his second prediction, publishers will release fewer games this year. Alan,
that's a classic epic fail along with my prediction about Lego. Boy.
Yeah, I would say so. And I would say individually, some publishers might have. I think Z-Man's publishing, their count might have gone down a little bit this year. Remember we had Zeb on the show and he was talking about producing less games? Because he came out with a boatload of titles.
He still came out with a boatload of titles this year.
All right. I don't have any actual numbers on it and I should look. I was over on his website the other day and I was eyeballing it, trying to get a count, and it looked like it had gone down. In terms of the industry as a whole, Alan, another year or two, and I think that prediction is going to hold true, but I think we jumped the gun for 2011. Number three, no more weird names. And because remember we were talking about the one, yeah. Year, yeah, the I don't know if he's right or wrong on that. I have seen fewer weird games.
I don't really think there's some odd sort of game names, but nothing. There's not that abstract game name thing going on.
Uwe Rosenberg's new title, his follow-up to Agricola, Ote a Labora, or something like that. It's Latin.
Yeah, but that's only one. Okay. You know, right. It's not like we've got a big trend where Fantasy Flight has half of their titles released and going, what? You know, they weren't writing in Sylvan, so we actually could read their writing and understand that the Lord True. Of the Rings was all the different Lord of the Rings titles.
Okay, so Alan might have hit that one there with no more weird names. He said his other predictions, by the way, I think were these might have been spot on. More designer diaries for new games, and I would say absolutely. I think that in the internet age, I remember when Zev was on the show, he said, look, my marketing is basically I do banner ads on the Geek. Well, it's those designer diaries that are that's the new guy's version of advertising, doing a banner ad on the Geek.
Pretty much. I mean,
getting that pre-press, getting your game pre-sold is huge, and the designer diaries, I think, are what's doing it.
Yeah, and they're very sophisticated. I've seen a number of them, and they're really very sophisticated. Amazing work that they're doing there.
One of the best that I've seen is the guy who does Minion games, or maybe it's either him or Tasty Minstrel. One of those, the guy who runs that company does a really great blog, and I was learning stuff from it last year when I was checking in on it regularly. I haven't checked in a while, but I think it might have been Tasty Minstrel, but it might have been Minion. I apologize. Google it, find out. It was a really good designer diary in terms of him talking about the whole business. Really enjoyed it. And Alan's last prediction of the year. Was that this would be the year of the game store. And I would have to say that given the fact that the hobby market seemed to do really well and with the expansion of the board game market, he might be right about that.
Yeah, it's but this is a hard call. You know, I can't say because locally this has been a disaster for stores, having nothing to do with sales in a lot of cases. You know, a lot of stores disappearing because of, you know, single owner dying type of situations, you know, unusual circumstances. So I can't really make that call.
Really? I saw that in 2009 and 2010, but certainly in 2009, when the economy tanked, I remember we did a show where we talked, and there were probably three or four game stores going under stories that had come out within a couple of months. But in 2011, now I haven't seen any new game stores, but I would have to say if I owned a game store that this would be a fairly healthy year.
Well, like I say, interesting. This year in the Chicagoland area, which are very few stores, there's about, I think, a half a dozen in the Chicagoland area, two of them closed. You know, that's an enormous loss for given how few there are.
That's true. That's a pretty big percentage. All right. So, Alan, we're split on whether or not you were right there or not. I thought that a rising tide would float all boats. Rhett says no. Even in this market, game stores are, you know, doing what game stores normally do. So those are our predictions. Rhett, we're weighing in at almost an hour and a half on this show, which is about where we came in on last year's show. So we're about par for the course on that. But how can they get in touch with us so that they can send us their listener predictions for 2012?
Well, we would love to hear from you, and you can email us at papermoney@purplepawn.com. You can go to our website, purplepawn.com. You know, that's yours. I'm going to let you.
Okay.
You'd love saying that, so I'm just going to ignore that. You can Skype us on Paper Money Podcast.
Yes, you can. And upcoming stuff. Okay. Our next show is going to be at the end of January, and we are going to talk about our 2012 predictions in January. Rhett, you had one astounding prediction already.
I have one astounding prediction for 2012. Star Wars.
You caught me completely off guard. I thought your major prediction was that, in fact, we would be here at the end of December 2012 to record the
Well, I was going to say that the nice thing afterwards is when we finish our predictions of 2012 and we come back to our review of 2012, we will be doing it post December 21st.
All right. So Rhett going on the record is saying the Mayan calendar is bunk.
That's right.
Or at least the interpretation that says the world ends then.
That's right. I am all convinced that we're going to be here. And if I'm wrong, no one will know the difference.
Oh, and that said, the other thing we're going to talk about in the show, we're going to talk about Toy Fair. We haven't talked about, we haven't focused on a convention in a long time, but we're going to do that in January. We're going to talk about it. If you're just now making plans to exhibit at Toy Fair, stop now. Right. Don't wait for the January show to decide. However, if you're talking about attending the show, we're going to have lots of good information for you at the January show.
Yeah.
So on that note.
Well, that's all for us. A Merry Christmas to all of you and a Happy New Year.
And a Happy Hanukkah and a Happy New Year as well. Thank you very much for listening. Again, very long show, but well worth your listening time.